Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich and Matt the Minion. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. You've got a lot of water to drink tonight, John.
I do have a lot of water to drink. I'm channeling my inner Caleb Causey from Lone Star Medics, you know, drink water. So, Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
That's good. I'm glad everyone's happy to be here. So, very interesting show this evening with Mr. Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. We're going to be talking about reactionary violence, what exactly that is, and how we train responsibly to use it if we absolutely need to. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. I am very, very pleased to announce that beginning this week, we're going to be broadcast in two new markets. So would like to welcome 630 WLAP Lexington in Kentucky, as well as 640 WHLO in Akron, Ohio, to the Ballistic Radio family. You'll be able to listen to the shows Saturday mornings at 11 in Lexington and 6 p.m. Mondays drive time. Hey, so I guess they like me in Akron better than they do in Lexington. I don't know. Or maybe that was just a time slot available. Either way, I am very, very honored to have the show expanding, and very, very thankful to all of you, the listeners, who have made that possible. We are in six major U.S. cities now, which is about five more than I ever expected to be in, so thank you all very much. So without further ado, is there anything I need to talk about before we get Paul on the air? I don't think there is there?
No. Don't really have any updates on the test guns or anything, do we?
No, not right now.
I don't know if you want to talk about...
I could talk about Blackfire Ordnance Group and TNT and TNT Black, but I think I'll be doing that for the rest of the show sometime after the commercial break, so maybe I won't. Anyway, let's get Paul Sharp on the line, and that was me moving something on the table, not me having an inappropriate radio moment. Anyway, the inappropriate radio moments will be right about now, because we are joined by Mr. Paul Sharp. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Hey, not too bad. It's really... good to have you back on the show. I appreciate you taking the time to come back on, especially now that people are actually listening to the show, whereas when you first joined us, we were quite a bit smaller. So thank you very much.
Yeah, man, you're taking off. It's like, I think you said two new radio stations?
Yeah.
That's really cool, man.
No,
Hopefully I don't say or do anything that endangers that tonight. I'll do my best, man. not get you kicked out of any nice places.
Well, you know, at least not not on the radio. So we're gonna all be up at Raven Concealment in a couple weeks. So if you want to get me kicked out somewhere up there, that's probably okay.
Oh,
but
dude, I specialize in getting kicked out of dive bars. I'm an expert.
Yeah, I know,
so,
man.
We do good at that.
Yes. But, I've learned it all by watching you. So anyway, for those that are not familiar with your background, do you mind telling me a little bit about what you've done in the past, what you're doing now, and then we'll get right into the meat of the show?
Sure. I've been a police officer for like 17 years now. Done some undercover work. Was in an undercover drug and vice unit. Also was a resident officer, which involved living in a neighborhood that the city chose, so you can imagine how that went.
Nice.
You know, they're like, hey, we need a police station here, so you're going to be the guy. So it was kind of fun. Was a definite introduction to the other side of life. And then from there, I've been, you know, a SWAT team guy for a long time as well. You know, I'm one of the hut guys. And now I'm working patrol on midnights and just enjoying my time. It's a whole crew of, you know, young, new guys. Everybody there has probably got, I would say, less than 7 years on the job, five to seven years on the job. So they're real gung-ho and excited, and it's fun. You know, we do a lot of cool training and stuff. And all during that time, I was also competing in MMA and boxing. And if I wasn't competing, then I was helping my friends get ready for their fights and doing that kind of thing. And then I was also getting my butt handed to me in IDPA and USPSA matches as well. And so just training and kind of making it a way of life, and that was how I've been spending my time. And then also training with Craig and guys like that. So kind of trying to expand, you know, my horizons and become as well-rounded as possible.
Well, and that seems to be the trick that everyone misses out on. It's kind of like, and it's Robert Heinlein quote that everyone's really popular. It is a very popular quote, at least in our circle, as far as specialization is for insects. But it seems really common for people to focus in on one or two things that they're good at and not spend the time learning all the other things that are going to make you a more rounded individual. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's true, man. I mean, we just had a couple guys come through courses that were pretty well-known instructors in their own right. And seeing them get in there and do the evos and stuff like that was inspirational, to say the least, because, you know, you have these guys that are pretty established already. It would be easy for them to say, you know, I'm just going to kind of audit this course. I'm not going to participate. And then here they are getting in there, getting banged around and getting their lumps, and they're doing it to it and coming out of it going, hey, I just found a weakness that I need to crush, basically. I need to devote myself to this area where I'm not as strong as I thought I was, until it is a strong point. And then I don't know, man. I think those are the kind of guys that we're just, you know, we like to work with, and they kind of are drawn to our circle, and we end up working with them, and it's a no BS kind of crowd. I mean, you're not going to be able to BS what just happened in the Evo. You know, it's like, yeah, I got my head handed to me, and it happens often, you know.
Well, and it's funny, because you were actually an assistant instructor at the ECQC class that I attended, and that's one of my favorite things to talk about, is how badly I got destroyed at that entire weekend. So,
oh, yeah. So you all could, man.
Well, you could tell some probably pretty interesting stories about, like, oh, I don't know, the first Evo I spent in the fist helmet, where I started crying almost and like, oh, I can't breathe. Well, you're yelling,
oh,
yes, you
yeah.
can breathe. That's funny what
yeah,
panic does to
you. Yeah, if you're talking, you can breathe, man.
Yep. Yep.
You know, but yeah, it. But you know what? That's the thing. I mean, you went through it, and you came out on the other side, and you adjusted your training programs based on that, you know, and your approach to training, and that's what we look for. You know, that's what we're all looking for. You know, I put myself into that situation and get my head handed to me, and I come out of it, and you know, a lot of times we video it, so that, you know, it's hard to argue with video,
right?
And or footage, digital, whatever you want to call it, but
yeah.
It's hard to argue with that, man. It's right there, you know, and. So I look at it and I go, man, I've really got to work on this aspect or that aspect, or, you know, it's a constant, I don't want to say it's a constant battle, but it's a constant pursuit,
right.
You know, of this ideal that we're looking to achieve. So, and it's pretty satisfying, man. I'm pretty happy with the way things have gone.
Yeah, no, so we're going to talk, we got about a minute left. We're talking with Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. We got a minute left before we go to break, and when we get back, we'll be talking about reactionary violence. But you and I sort of discussed this a little bit. For people that are maybe not familiar with the term, as I'm using it at least,
sure.
can you tell people what that is?
It's basically our response to immediate violence, immediate and to some degree unpredictable violence, where, you know, like we were talking, you're walking out to your car, you just got your latte, you're not thinking about anything but errands you have to run today, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a mess.
Yeah.
You know, we see it all the time now, especially at gas stations and stuff. It seems to be prime hunting ground for these guys right now, is these gas stations, which boggles my mind because they know they're on camera.
Right.
But yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about. Just how do we address that? How do we deal with it? How do we come to some sort of understanding? And then how do we train to deal with it?
Perfect. So we're going to go to break. When we get back, we'll be talking a little bit more with Paul Sharp about that. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black Firearms Finishes. So tough, you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Also, too, a reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. So, we are discussing reactionary violence with Mr. Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. Paul, are you still there?
I am here.
Excellent. So before the break, you kind of discussed a little bit about what reactionary violence is in the context of what we're talking about. And it's essentially the response that you need to be able to call upon when you're going about your day-to-day business, not really thinking about it, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in a violent encounter.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think we see this often in EVOs and in different courses and stuff, and even – you know, when you watch the CCTV footage of people getting mugged or assaulted in various ways, there's a hesitation on the part of the victim,
right?
And there's almost a disconnect. Like, it's almost as if we look at it from a communication standpoint, it's as if we're speaking a different language, And in the moments that it takes for me to understand what's being said, it's too late.
Right.
You're like, I'm not processing it. And I think when we look at it from that perspective, like, essentially, this is a communication breakdown. Like, I need to understand what's being said and how it's being said. And once we get that under our belt and begin to understand that, we can begin to understand the cycle that this is going to go through, the assault that we're talking about, the problem. We begin to understand it's going to go through certain phases, mm-hmm. and it might be inevitable. Like,
right.
there might be no way out. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's hard for some people to accept. Like, you know, a frequent thing that victims will say is, why did this happen to me?
Right.
And the problem is you can almost see it when they're in the middle. Like, if you see footage of assaults and stuff, you can almost see that kind of body language where they're like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Like, make it go away. It's like, no, dude, you have to make it go away. You know?
Right.
You know, not to laugh at their plight, but that's kind of where they're, it's like, nothing's going to make this stop except you.
Right. It's interesting, too, because this seems to be, when you see things like this that make national news, for instance, there was recently a woman that was out on a trail in Dallas, Georgia, I want to say it was, mm-hmm. That was beaten very, very badly for no other reason than someone wanted to beat her very, very badly.
Right.
But
right.
And I think that the reason why it's caught so many people's attention is because they actually released photos of the victim afterwards, and usually they don't, and she was beaten to the point where her husband did not recognize her in the hospital, which is
right.
a terrible, terrible thing. But it seems like, you know, the amount of surprise that everyone has expressed that there is someone out there capable of doing that sort of thing was the interesting part to me, just because, you know, as terrible as it is, it didn't seem that unusual to me because I can think of all sorts of times that that's happened. So,
right.
I mean, how do we get the average everyday person that's maybe not thought too much about self-defense in the past to kind of come to grips with the sort of predators that are out there walking around amongst us?
Right, and that is the main problem, I think, for a trainer. That is the, not problem, but challenge that a trainer has to face, is how do I get normal, everyday, good people to understand that evil exists?
Right.
And not only does it exist, it's looking for you if it gets the opportunity.
Right.
If you kind of venture into that zone where it finds you, it's coming for you. So how do we get people to get there? And I think one of the things that we first have to get across to people is that they are not you. And that's not a judgment, and that's not anything of that nature. It's just a fact, right? It's just you and I probably weren't raised in an environment where at any point in time our door got kicked in by either rival gang members or the police, and then we were thrown up against the wall or thrown on the floor. We saw our mom get pistol whipped or beat around or smacked around, and all kinds of hyper-violent action occur at 4 years of age.
Right.
But I know kids that have.
Yeah.
You know, pretty frequently.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how it works. So now you fast forward that kid. If he makes it through to 17, 18 years old without dying or going to prison, now this kid's on the street and he interacts with you or I,
mm-hmm.
who were not raised in that environment and who do not think that it's okay to take whatever you want by force, nor do we applaud that. Like, you know, I kind of have a theory, and, you know, William April will probably correct me a million different ways on this one, but I have a theory that, you know, some of this stuff that's happening on these CCTV cameras where these guys pull these robberies and stuff, where they know they're on camera,
mm-hmm.
you know, like at gas stations, ATMs, they know they're on camera. They're not foolish. They're not new at this.
Right.
I think it's because they kind of get a little bit of a superstar rating from that.
Right.
Like, you know, if some 16-year-old kid is probably not going to make the news for academic achievement, but that same 16-year-old kid can sucker punch a 74-year-old grandma on a CCTV camera somewhere and knock her cold, take her stuff and run off laughing, and now he's on World Star Hip Hop or whatever it is,
right.
as a superstar.
Right.
You know, so he gets notoriety. So you're dealing with a whole different set of values than what most people are raised with. So most of the guys that come to gun courses or to, you know, ECQC or EWO are usually, you know, from the same socioeconomic background, regardless of race, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of any of those things. They're from the same background. They were raised in a good home. You know, usually one or both parents were very present in their life. And so they weren't raised to be ultra-violent at the drop of a hat.
Right.
So we have to get them to understand that, that you're not dealing with a guy that you're going to be able to negotiate with. If he's engaged you, from the moment you engaged this guy, it was on.
Right.
Whether you knew it or not, the fight's on. So as soon as you start to – that's why I'm big on the ask, tell, and then make model,
mm-hmm.
because you don't get too much of a bargaining cushion in there. You don't get a whole lot of time to go back and forth with this guy. If you tell somebody to stop, and I think that's one of the things that that came to light from Gavin DeBecker's work, was if you tell somebody no mm-hmm. and they ignore that, that's a huge warning sign.
Well, and that's interesting that you mentioned that, because kind of what we're talking about right now is sort of managing unknown contacts with Craig Douglas's model for how you deal with these interactions from day-to-day people that aren't necessarily a threat, but you don't know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And everyone's kind of got a different flavor of that because they, you know, we all communicate differently. We're all capable of different things, I guess. And it's interesting because whenever I'm approached by someone and it's usually, hey, can I have a dollar? Or, hey, can I have a cigarette or something like that? I don't bother with any of the niceties at the mm-hmm. beginning of that just because I don't pull them off very well. And it's an immediate... No, go away. And it's kind of like you
and
said.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
That's the difficulty to get across to people. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not rude. It's self-preservation.
Right.
You know, I don't know this guy.
Right.
I don't know what his intents are. I don't know anything about this guy. And he just approaches me out of the blue asking or demanding, you know, which I see more in the Chicagoland area. The homeless guys are a little more demanding.
Yeah.
You know, I one night we were walking back from – I hate to admit this. We went to see the fray, and yeah, Kelly Clarkson opened, so I have that as my saving grace.
Okay, there you go.
Act, so yeah, it was worth it for that. But anyway, so we go to see him, and we're walking back to the hotel, and we had some food, and a homeless guy approaches me. I see him coming, and he starts. This is his opening. Give me the food or the girl. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, how about 5 or 6 230-grain rounds? You know, I'm like, no, dude, you know. So it went from there, you know. But that's kind of,
well,
you know what I'm saying. It's
yeah.
Just, we're dealing with a different mentality.
Well, let me pause you right here too, Paul. For people that don't know Paul, and I know you've gotten kind of scrawny lately, but I won't make fun of
yeah.
me on air for that or anything.
Thank you.
But you're welcome. But Paul is a big, giant, angry-looking man that in one of the – and I'm a big dude. I'm right now I'm 6'2 and 245 pounds. But when I was at the ECQC class and you were AIing it, we did a couple of the exercises where I semi got to spar with you. And you're one of the people that I don't know if there would be enough bullets in the gun to make you stop doing whatever it is you wanted to do. I mean, so Paul is an intimidating gentleman that if I were any sort of criminal would be the last person I would pick. So just think about that too, is that, you know, guys like you get approached and accosted like that. If you're, you know, 5'8" and 120 pounds or whatever, you don't look like that big of a meal to somebody.
Right. Yeah, and that plays a factor. That tells you a little bit of that guy's mentality.
Right.
You know, he's been raised in a world where he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
He will adapt. He will overcome one way or the other. I mean, he's living on the streets, so he knows how to in a city that it gets 30 below in the winter.
Yeah.
So he knows how to get over, man. He knows how to make it work. So we have to get across to people, this is what you're dealing with.
Right.
You know, if you tell somebody, like you said, there's no need to be pleasant. There's no need for pleasantries. Now I do believe there's room for a self-protection model that is based on perfection. Like if I'm talking to there's all different forms of muck, right? We call it sport muck, where, you know, you're dealing with, say, a guy on the train who's just kind of drunk, but he's a happy drunk.
Right.
You know, as opposed to dealing with the guy on the train who wants to use your cell phone and isn't going to let it go.
Right.
You know, so there's different areas we're going to move into, but I look at it like, you know, ask, tell, and make, and it's just that simple. You don't have time for a whole lot of bargaining and bartering with these guys. We don't understand the circumstances they were raised in, and to you and I, we might, and this is what we see a lot of times in Evos, where guys barter with each other during the Evos, right? Because
yeah.
they're from the same background.
Right.
So if I talk to you in a way that you understand, immediately you're like, oh, okay, cool. You know,
yeah.
it kind of de-escalates things. Now, if I'm talking to a guy who just got out of prison, and I talk about this in MDoc, where there's a guy during my undercover work, there's a guy who just got out of prison, hyper-violent dude, and I think William April uses his example in one of his presentations as well.
Let me actually interrupt just because we're going to have to go to break, but hold that thought, and when we get back,
okay.
we'll hear the rest of it. Right now we're talking sure. with Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. So, this evening we are talking with Mr. Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense, or if it's afternoon or morning, wherever you're at, that's really when we're recording the show. I drew attention to it, and I just ruined the streak. Anyway, talking with Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. Paul, are you still there?
I'm still here, man.
Excellent. So you were telling a story about a hyper-violent individual, and then I cut you off to go to the break. So if you could pick that back up.
How rude.
I know, right?
Bills to pay, whatever.
Yeah. Dude. I'm laying down.
Yeah, no worries, bro.
Sold out.
No worries, man. Hey, so anyway, the point is that this guy, you know, he was bumped by another patron at the bar, reaching between us to get his drinks, which that happens, right? I mean, no big deal. You know, ordinarily, if I bump into a guy or you bump into a guy, you know, what would our response be? If we made him spill his drink, we're reasonable people. You know, I'm probably going to say, hey, man, I'm sorry. Let me buy you another one.
Yep.
You know, because I have no interest in getting into a bar fight. That's, you know, whatever. So
they're not,
man,
as fun
guy,
as they used to be 10 years ago.
Exactly. You know, the police have no sense of humor anymore. You know, there's no more spray and release. So, you know, this guy, though, his response was immediate, extreme violence. I mean, a beatdown. And in his mind, he had been disrespected. And the world that he lives in, if you put your hands on him and he doesn't respond, even if he loses the fight, if he doesn't respond with violence, he's a punk.
Right.
And every time he's seen out in the neighborhood, he's a target. So even if you lose, but it's a vicious fight, and you put up a good fight, you earned your rep and people will leave you alone.
Right.
But if they know they can touch you and nothing happens. So now, but then that to me was kind of a vivid contrast of our world, because like I said, in our world, it would have been just, hey, let me get you a drink, dude. Or it would have been nothing. It would just, because I was just kind of like, oh, sorry, man.
Yeah.
You know, no big deal. You know, but his response was, it's on. And we got to get it on right now.
Right.
So getting that across to other people who are normal, who function in society as a normal person, is kind of a challenge. But once you get it across to them, they start to click. Like, listen, you have a short period of time. This is, think of this as a hyper relationship. Like, you have from 5 to 10 seconds and to have this kind of relationship with somebody that's going to end either as a bad breakup or you choose to just go your own way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, I try to get it across to people like, hey, this is what's happening. You have engaged each other now. And how this ends up is up to you. You know, like, you can't let this go the wrong way. Once this cascade begins and you're behind the curve, you're probably not going to recover.
Well, and it seems the other interesting thing, too, is that the consequences that people think exist for whatever it is that's going on are generally much more severe than whatever they think is actually going to happen. And I've seen all sorts of video of fights that started that ended in someone dying that probably didn't even need to start in the first place. So,
sure.
We'll fast forward a little bit. Once we've gotten the average everyday person to recognize that there are people out there that are totally okay with that, what's the next step? I mean, obviously we want we want everyone to come home to their families at the end of the day and be safe.
Absolutely.
But we don't want to train people to overreact to situations either. So what's the answer?
As far as how we respond to an attack?
How do we train people to understand the level of violence needed, I guess?
I think one of the best ways to train them is you know, they have to be trained in an environment that's alive. You know, and aliveness is going to be comprised of three things, right? It's going to be movement, timing, and energy or resistance. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be dealing with people who are actively fighting back every time they train. So it sounds kind of silly, but the more you get punched in the face, the more immune you are to overreacting to getting punched in the face.
Right.
If that makes sense, you know. So you go through a couple of EVOs and you start to see the spaces. You know, I think Claude Werner was telling me that Farnham calls those the gaps that we die in,
right.
Those places where our brain does not catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And through training in an alive environment where there's active resistance and the guy, it's pretty close to a real fight, we begin to smooth out those gaps and we begin to give ourselves time to think. You know, when we don't have time to think, when we don't have time to adapt quickly, we end up overreacting in an attempt to catch up.
Right.
So we end up going too far, too fast.
That's where people end up in jail that probably didn't need to go to jail.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a guy a few years ago out in New York that cut a bouncer in the leg with a knife and hit the femoral. And it was a pretty well-known story. Man, I don't know. You know, I mean, obviously it wasn't necessary. It was an over-escalation. And now that guy's got some problems. So, you know, where is the middle ground?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think we, by default, we have to be reactionary.
Yeah.
Like we aren't in a position where we can walk around, you know, guns up, heads up, and just, we aren't in that position.
Especially I was going to say too is that seems to be when you talk about people that are not necessarily in our culture, and some of the stereotypes that they seem to have regarding, you know, self defense people or gun people in general, is that everyone's out, you know, looking to shoot somebody or something like that, which is about as far from the truth as it could be.
Oh yeah,
right. So
I think I've met maybe one of those guys in thousands of people.
Yeah,
that I've trained or have trained with.
Yeah, I've not run into two. Maybe one. And honestly, that guy was an idiot. And
yeah, he was that guy.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So, but yeah, I think that's. I think, you know, again, we come back to most the background for most of those guys. You know, they're from good homes, from a decent upbringing, and they just want to protect their family.
Yeah.
You know, and by default, they have to be reactionary, and that's where training comes in. Because, you know, I don't know if you saw I think it was Discovery Channel. They had a thing where they were doing a series on reaction time, human reaction times, and are you faster than? Do you remember that one where they had? I think it was Jerry Rice, and he's actually faster than a bolt of lightning.
Yeah,
his reaction time was like 0.4 something. It's crazy, you know. So by training, we can increase our reaction time or decrease our reaction time. So training, you know, is the way, you know, the old judo saying, and training, you know, the way is in training. So by training ourselves, by working hard, studying our craft, we give ourselves a little bit of a buffer zone.
Right.
You know, we give ourselves that buffer zone. The other thing is just, you know, going back to the mindset side of it all is finding out what it is that's going to motivate you. Because, again, you know, when we deal with guys from a decent home background or social background, those guys usually aren't going to be hateful people.
Yeah.
You know, so you're dealing with a guy who is this kid that's been raised in a world of hate and violence, who hates everybody, and he might not even hate people. It's just you are prey.
Right.
You know, you're the way he's going to eat. You're the way he's going to take care of himself. And then he runs into a guy who's spent his whole life trying to learn how to forgive people and, you know, take the high road. It's a unique clash, you know, of cultures. And whether we like it or not, you have to figure out a way to motivate yourself to get home, like you said, to your loved ones. You know, that, and that's what it comes down to. That would be the next step. After I get them through the training, after I get them to understand the violence, after I get them to understand how fast things fall apart, how fast this cascade begins, we get them to understand it's okay to go. It's actually okay to punch somebody or pepper spray them as an opening volley.
Yeah.
And then it's also okay to not be nice to people. You know, once we get them past all that, then we have to start working on their mindset, you know, and getting them to understand what's going to motivate them to go home.
Right. Well, and going back to the not being nice to people, too, one of my favorite examples of this, and I'm pretty sure I stole it from DeBecker, but it's like when someone gets on an elevator, and if you are a, you know, let's say mid-20s, attractive female by herself, and you're alone on an elevator, and two people get on the elevator that you, for whatever reason, are not comfortable with, it's okay to get off the elevator.
Absolutely.
You know, it's okay to be rude. It's okay to, you know, hurt someone's feelings, I guess, for lack of a better word. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. We, you know, I can't get too far into it because it just happened, but we have a situation that happened that I know of recently where that played a big role in the sexual assault.
Yeah.
You know, was she didn't want to be rude.
Yeah.
And you know what? When you have that feeling, when you get to that place to where they're not listening to no,
yeah,
it's okay to get up and get out.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong. And who cares if they think you're rude?
Well,
you know, it's not like it's a friend.
Yeah.
You know?
And most of my friends think I'm rude anyway, so it's kind of.
Yeah, so it works out, right?
Yeah, it does, for me at least.
Yeah, it's good. It's good, man. It's good to have that kind of a-hole factor, you know, where you're like, oh, that's just him.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm like, well, yeah, you know.
So we got about 30 seconds left, and then we got to go back to the break, and we'll get into the last segment. I'd kind of like to talk about, you know, I guess, how do we get people to, like you said, go, to be violent enough when the need finally arises? I want to say it was Paul Gomez. That was one of the things that he was known for saying is that, you know, most people get hurt because they don't react violently enough, quickly enough. So,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah, when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that with Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Paulipalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country, including Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense, August 16th and 17th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, click the Paulipalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Paulipalooza 2 tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information and save the date, August 16th and 17th. So, we are having an interesting conversation with Paul Sharp from Sharp Defense about reactionary violence. You still there, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. I think I've run out of opportunities to accidentally hang up on you, which is probably good for everyone involved. So
it doesn't hurt my feelings.
Well, you know? That's good. I'm glad.
You know. But I just go back to the a-hole factor. I'm like, that's just John. It's
that's right.
It's all good. It's all good.
I hung up on Todd Green, I want to say, 4 or 5 times, and he's one of my good, good friends. So there you go.
Oh, man. I don't feel so bad then.
There you go. So moving forward just a little bit past... what we were talking about as far as getting people to understand that they need to be incredibly violent when it's called for, how do we get that? I mean, is it just, like you said, more opposing wills and getting them as close to a fight as we can in training, or what do we do?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. That's the physical component, and then the mental component is figuring out. And this is where that personalized coaching comes in, where you figure out what motivates this guy. You know, you're not going to get a guy who's been raised to forgive and forget, and that, you know, God loves everybody, so he should love everybody. You're not going to get that guy to hate people.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. So what I usually do with those guys is I get them to focus on what matters to them. Like, you know, with you, I would be like, listen, do you want another guy to raise your son? Do you want another guy to fill the role you're going to fill in your son's life?
Right.
You know, and this is how I would talk to you before an evil.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, these two people that you're about to engage are trying to take that away from you.
Yeah.
They are trying to destroy the thing you love. What? You have to get it on. Not that you hate them, but that you love your son that much. Right. That you're going to do whatever you got to do to get out of here.
Well, and it's funny you say that because I immediately got angry as soon as you said it. So it's a really effective tactic as far as finding motivation. I mean, I guess it's just different for everyone, and everyone needs to think about what it is that's important to them.
Absolutely. You know, there's an old Caliber Press thing. I mean, old. It makes me feel old saying that, but, you know, I'm not that old, man. But they had a thing where you were to write down all the things that matter to you and all the reasons why you need to go home at night at the end of your shift.
Yeah.
You know, whether if you were a police officer or a firefighter or whatever it might be. You know, these are the reasons why you need to make good decisions. These are the reasons why you need to make good choices in those moments. You know, and these are also the reasons why you need to fight with everything you've got when your back's to the wall.
Yeah.
Because this is why you need to go home. And, you know, for some guys, it was just, you know, it was their wife or their kids or whatever it was, or their mom or dad. And for some, it was pride.
Yeah.
You know, for some guys, it was, you know, I can't lose. I don't want to lose. I don't want people to know I lost.
Right.
You know, so whatever it might be, you have to tap into that. You know, you have to take a moment. I think everybody should take a little bit of time and just kind of write down the things that motivate them first to do this training. You know, why are we doing this? Because this training is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not by any means. You know, whether it's getting out and putting miles in on the road or lifting weights or dry practicing every day. And, you know, I know guys that, you know, dealing with elbow injuries and everything else, and they're still going out and shooting,
right.
You know, and it's not an easy life, but it's what we do, and we're motivated to do it. Well, what is that motivation? You know, why do we do this? Now, write that out, you know, get some specific points and definitive or concrete reasons, and keep those in the forefront of your mind when you train. This is why I'm doing this,
right.
So that when you get into a situation, you can automatically access, this is why I'm doing this.
Right. So, and to be clear, too, I mean, obviously you and I spend a lot of time doing this because it's very, very critical for your job, and my job is doing this. It's not that everyone needs to go out and train necessarily every weekend or anything like that. Would you say that, you know, for most people, once they've gone and taken something like ECQC, or which is ShivWorks, ShivWorks, Craig Douglas, his excellent class on pretty much an entangled gunfight or a mugging, for lack of a better term, which is all it is. But
yeah, it's a beatdown with Sims guns.
yeah, pretty much.
EWO is just a knife version. It's the European version,
right?
You know, of the same course, but.
So would you say that as far as just finding a class that they can make and then take the lessons from that and apply it to their day-to-day life afterwards?
Absolutely. And then form a training plan based on weaknesses found in that class.
Right.
So you have to be ruthless. I have to be ruthless with myself. I mean, you know, I joke around about, you know, my head. Like, nobody ever told me my head was so giant until I saw pictures of me standing next to people. I'm like, dude, I look like one of those bobblehead doll standing next to my friend, you know, but I'm like, maybe that's because of my ego. And it's never easy, you know, to realize that there's parts that I just suck at, but you have to be ruthless and you have to just pursue those weaknesses until they're crushed. So you have to build a training program based around that,
right.
You know, and maybe put the things that you're good at on a maintenance schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I can drill, you know, an 8x10 steel target at 100 yards, you know, with a mag out of my Glock 17 and not miss, you know, all 18 rounds hit. Okay, maybe I've got that part of it down, man. Maybe, but, you know, my in-fight weapon access or, you know, my verbal agility, those skills are lacking. Maybe it's time to look into like a Toastmaster club or something like that where I can go and put myself out there in my weakest area and have others judge me and give me critiques that will improve me.
Right. So we're coming up on the end of the show. We got a couple minutes left. And I know I've mentioned Craig's class a couple times now. You're actually you're instructing as well, if people missed that. You've got a thing that you're doing with William April coming up.
Yes.
Tell me about that, when that is, and how people can get signed up for it.
Actually, I don't know when that is.
Oh, I gave you the perfect opportunity here, Paul.
Great fade. You know, it's in September.
Yep.
I want to say the 13th or 14th, and it's going to be an excellent I'm talking about William's part. It's going to be excellent. We're going to be talking about this kind of stuff. We're going to be talking about reacting to sudden and unexpected violence, dealing with the problem of basically the firearms portion that I'm going to be doing is basically how do we become our own HRT or SWAT team? How do I rescue myself?
Right.
From, you know, while with family or friends or loved ones, how do I get us out of this situation? William's going to be talking about, you know, the five W's, the violent offenders, violent actions, or violent actors, violent actions portion that he talks about, as well as expanding into other areas of predicting criminal behavior and that kind of thing. It's going to really – I'm looking forward to it from a student perspective.
Right.
I'm looking forward to just being there and just soaking it in, because anytime you're around William, you're going to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's one thing. I might not be the smartest guy in the room, but I'm smart enough to know when I should listen to certain people, and he's one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to that class, too. I'm going to try very, very hard to make it to that, because when I saw you guys announce that, it was like, ooh, this is going to be really, really good. So, I mean, I guess to sum up, everyone should realize there are bad people out there, realize that the fight is sometimes beyond our control, and that we need to find a reason to come home at the end of the day. I mean, that's
absolutely. Find your motivation. Find a way to train to that motivation, and also let that get you out of that situation.
Right.
No, keep that in your mind, that this is why I'm doing this. I have to react this way, not because I hate this person, not because I overly want to hurt them, but I need to get back to the people that matter to me.
Right. So, and I guess that's really just something important that everyone should be thinking about anyway, but hopefully we've gotten people maybe going a direction they weren't going to go. Paul, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Thank you,
Hey, hope you enjoy the rest of your evening, sir.
Yes, for sure. You too, man.
All right, take it easy. So, I'm not exactly sure who we're having on next weekend, but I do know we are recording a show with Mr. Kyle DeFore this Wednesday, I want to say. So that should be pretty good. I'll post more updates on the Facebook page as they become available. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like that Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next time.